You're listening to ESPN 100.3 FM, KLRZ, La Rose, New Orleans, and the River Region.
It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Hello, sports fans.
Well, hello there.
Local sports, national sports. The GCAT has got you covered.
Oh, you made a wise choice, my friend.
Time to tee it up and let it fly. It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Check it out, John.
It is hour number three, Western Conference Finals tonight. Warriors, Rockets, who do you got? Eastern Conference Finals started yesterday. Celtics 108, Cavs 83, as Boston takes a 1-0 lead in that best-of-seven series. We'll touch with Dino Hansen, bottom of the hour, and talk a little bit about the ECFs and the West Conference Finals getting underway today. Marlon Favorite at 215. I'm going to ask him specifically about things that maybe Marcus Davenport's going to be working on from here on out. The hand battles that I saw at left tackle between him, Michael Olah, you know, just kind of fun. I want to kind of get into in-depth positions there as well. And also Saints defensive tackle Jay Bromley getting signed after trying out over the weekend. Also that left tackle, Michael Olah, getting a one-year deal from the Saints after that tryout as well. As rookie minicamp is underway. A pair of Tulane Green Waves also getting their rookie minicamps under their belts. Head coach Willie Fritz joining us here on the Sports Hangover. First chance I've gotten a chance to talk to you since the spring game. We tried to get you on right after there. We couldn't for a reason or another. But, Coach, thanks for dropping by and saying hi to us this afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great, Gus. How are you?
Good, man. We'll get in a little bit into that spring game and as we get closer now to the season getting underway as the summer's just around the corner here, and then fall ball will come. But how nice was it to see Ade Aruna and Pari Nickerson get drafted?
Yeah, I was really happy for both those guys. They put in a lot of hard work. Ade, he's not a finished product yet. He's going to get better. He's got a lot of potential, great size, speed, explosiveness. He's only been playing football five or six years, I believe, and every day he gets a little bit better, and hopefully he'll be in a situation up there in Minnesota where they allow him to develop, and I can see him being a great player 3 or 4 years down the line. Perry's put in a lot of hard work, and he finally put a little bit of weight on. He's up about 185. Both those guys did a great job at the combine, and I've had a chance to see Perry quite a bit here recently, and he felt like he did a great job up in the rookie camp, and I think he's back up there right now for a regular camp. So really happy for both those guys.
I was going to help in recruiting in different areas like that. You've made no bones about it. We saw during games last year in the sideline guys like Doss over with Denver and other players that come in. You know, we've seen what Grant's been able to do in Washington, Orleans, Darkwater. It's not bad, and it kind of helps you, doesn't it, Coach, when you go into people's living rooms to start throwing out some guys that you might see on Sundays?
Yeah, it really does. 2 years ago, the American actually had more players drafted than the Big 12. And then last year, I think Big 12 had 20 and the American had 18. So this is a primetime league. It's a great competition week in and week out. There's a lot of fantastic players that are going on and having success in the NFL.
You know, Coach, one of the things, I'm glad you brought that up, we got a chance to see Tre'Quan Smith this weekend with the Saints rookie minicamp. And, I mention sometimes when I'm having conversations with buddies about how tough the American Conference is. You look at the championship game last year. One team had one loss. The other team goes on to beat Auburn and claim a national championship in UCF. And that's where Tre'Quan Smith goes. There's a lot of talent, and you're starting to see that, right? I mean, some receivers from SMU were considered and went into the draft as well. But I don't have to tell you that, do I?
No, it really is excellent league. You know, I was in the Sun Belt for a couple of seasons when I was at Georgia Southern before I came to Tulane. It was a good league, no doubt about it. And I think the top teams in that league could certainly come over and compete in the American and other conferences as well. But from top to bottom, this is a lot different league. And, one of the things that we're doing as a conference, we just got back from our head coaches meeting there a couple of weeks ago, is our commissioner is really challenging us to play as many high-profile games as we possibly can. We're proud of the fact that we've got a few conferences right now that count us as Power Five games. You know, and when the season gets over and they decide to, you know, have an opportunity to play in bowl games and those types of things. So I think it's just a matter of time before we become part of the Power Six, which is what we're promoting right now as a league.
Ohio State, September 22nd, the Horseshoe. You guys will be making the travel over there here as well. You mentioned the strength of that conference as well. What about having Jonathan Banks be the third-ranked quarterback in the AAC? That's got to mean a little something in maybe that progression too, because would you say he was probably one of the positive storylines coming out of the spring?
Yeah, he really was. I thought, you know, you saw it in action during the season. I thought the last four or five games he really took off and did a nice job. You know, the part of getting into the season is, as coaches, is learning what your guys can do and maybe can't do, and trying to tailor your offense towards their strengths and staying away from their weaknesses. He just certainly is an athletic quarterback, got a really strong arm. There's not a throw he can't make out on the field. I think he's a pro prospect. I really do. I he's just getting better and better, and his feet are catching up with his upper body and his arm strength and the mechanics of playing quarterback. And he's quickening his release up, which is so important in that run-pass option game that everybody's doing. Even I even see it in the NFL now. So we're looking for a big year from Jonathan, without question.
One of the things, Coach, that always helps a quarterback is a good running game. You're losing two guys there, obviously, in Hilliard and Beatty, but how does that backfield sort of look with Tulane based off of the spring that you looked at?
Well, you know, those two guys, certainly great players, had great careers here at Tulane, but I really think we can be as strong at that position. You know, Darius Bradwell really came on towards the end of the year. He's a big bruising back, you know, 230, 235, great vision, you know, run a lot of inside zone and outside zone, and that's a vision play. You got to be able to, you know, be slow to the hole and fast through it. And he certainly does a good job of that. Stephon Hutterson had a really nice spring for us, and he played some as a true freshman last year. Corey Dauphine, we redshirted him last year. He's a transfer from Texas Tech. And, I don't know if you saw it or not, but Corey Dauphine, Jatavian Tolles, one of our wide receivers, and then Devin Jet Glenn from over at Warren Easton High School. There were three 75% of the 4x1 relay that just set a new school record for Tulane yesterday over in the conference track meet. So, you know, obviously those guys can really run. And we signed some good freshmen. Last week I had a little time and I went back and watched, you know, all the guys that we signed, their highlight tapes, one game tape as well. And you know, it's good to, you know, when all the dust settles and you feel good about it in May that you sign these guys.
Right.
And, you know, so I think we're going to have a really, really good stable of backs.
Yeah, we're going to get to defense here in a quick second, but you brought up just some of the names of some of the guys that are here local. I know it's an important thing with you. You said in the past, look, you're going to go get players wherever you go. Speak with head coach Willie Fritz of the Tulane Green Wave. But to be able to get some local folks and some local players in, it obviously helps get the interest and things of that nature. But also, how important does it make a game, say, September 8th when you take on a team like Nicholls?
Well, I think it's important without question. I know there's great, great football here in Louisiana, and particularly here in, you know, the greater New Orleans area. And, you know, we'd like to get more guys closer. You know, there's a lot of Division I football players in this area. There's a lot of competition for these guys. You know, so we're trying as hard as we can to get as many local guys as we can. You know, guys that fit into, you know, our culture, you know, athletically. You got to be a Division I football player without question, but they got to be able to handle the rigors of Tulane academically, and they also got to be mature socially. I've been doing this a long time, and, you know, we want those guys that understand the importance of getting a degree and doing things right from wrong off the field. And we've got a really good group of young men, and a bunch of them are local guys. You know, the two guys you talked about, you know, Dontrell is over from Baton Rouge, Scotlandville High School, but, you know, him and Sherman Beatty from John Curtis, those two guys are, you know, they're what you're looking for. We'll get as many of those guys as we possibly can.
Two final questions for you. As I said, we go into the defense here. We mentioned Pyre Nickerson getting drafted in Aruna as well. You know, just over the last two seasons, since you've really seen some key names, some key players, some guys go into the NFL from that side of the football. And Coach, you'd agree with me, right? I mean, that side of the football has been a side that's kept Tulane in games and really made them competitive over the last two seasons. Are you starting to see kind of that talent kind of got back in there? And who are some of the guys you're going to be counting on to be leaders in that secondary linebacker and D-line front?
Oh, I think Rod Teamer is really poised to have a great season for us in the secondary. He's from Brother Martin High School, just a he's got a linebacker mentality when it comes to run plays, and then when it pass plays, he does a great job with coverage and closing the middle of the field. And just got to keep him away from that injury bugaboo, and he's been working extremely hard on that. And then Donnie Lewis from over Central over in Baton Rouge, I think is a guy we needed Donnie to step up and be, like Perry was this last year for us, be a stopper over there. And Donnie had a great season for us last year, but we're looking for him to even take it to another level. But those are a couple guys in the secondary that I think are going to have big, big years for us.
Wake Forest was your first game as head coach of the Tulane Green Wave. That was on the road. Hopefully you can repay the favor there in that game, as the three of your first five are going to be at Yulman Stadium. Coach, I'll just ask it this way, based off of what I did to Dennis Allen on Saturday when I asked him, is Marcus Williams thinking of that Minnesota play and things of that nature? Is that SMU play, that 1 yard, that game, been a motivating factor at all? Do you even reference it, talk about it? You guys can't wait for that season to start? And then throw a slash in there, how important it is to get a good start to the season with 3 of 5 at home?
I think it's always important to get a good start. You certainly can have a great season even if you don't have a great start, but it sure does make it easier if you come out of the box hot. We got a tough schedule, obviously, with I think 9 of the 12 teams we play, played in postseason bowl games. Starting off with Wake Forest, who dismantled Texas A&M in their bowl game. I think they scored 56 points against them, so very potent offense. Playing Nichols the second week at home. Those guys played in the NCAA playoffs this last year, and they put a scare into both Georgia and Texas A&M over the last couple of years. Then going over and playing Ohio State, I heard they're decent. I'm being sarcastic.
Right.
But going up there and playing those guys, and then also playing UAB, who played in the bowl game last year. So, it's a tough schedule. It's a good schedule. We like it. We like the challenge of being able to play great competition. And hopefully we'll get a bunch of people interested in coming on out and getting season tickets for us and being a part of Tulane Green Wave football. Because I really think we get people out here, and I think better than anybody, Gus, from working on the broadcast. I think they'll really be impressed with the level of play, both with Tulane and also with our opponent. And, we got the program going in the correct direction. We just need to get a little bit better. We had 4 losses last year by a combined total of 12 points, so we're close. We got to do a good job of finishing games and everybody getting a little bit better, both coaches and players.
At Green Wave Football is where to follow Tulane Football over on Twitter. Coach, always a pleasure. Nice to catch up, and before you know it, you'll be out there again for a little fall ball and getting the season going.
Thank you very much. Roll Wave.
Yep, appreciate it. Quick break. We come back. We'll touch a little football with Marlon Favorite as well. Look, 3 of the first 5 on the road there. Important to kind of get that. Nichols game is going to be, I think, fun, right? I mean, both teams really need that. They're not in the same division. I get it, but Nichols looking to build on their season last year. And for Tulane, I mean, is that a game you're supposed to win, right? Recruiting here as well. Be interesting to continue that conversation as the season gets closer. All right, quick break. We come back. Marlon Favorite, hands, Jordan, hands. How do you use your hands inside the trenches? I'll ask him that when we come back. It's the Sports Hangover on ESPN New Orleans. To see Marcus Davenport for the first time. Had some interesting battles with left tackle Michael Olof. Saints giving him a 1-year deal. after his tryout this weekend. He's a veteran lineman, 30 years old. Marlon Favorite loves to go inside the trenches. As a matter of fact, this podcast is called Inside the Trenches. Joins us Mondays and Fridays to talk a little foosball. What's up, Marlon? How are you?
What up, guys? Hello, somebody.
There he is. See, that makes me feel so much better, especially on a Monday. Buddy, we got a chance to go out there on Saturday, and I get what it is. It's rookie minicamp. There's only so much you can sort of take out of it. But at the same time, Marlon, that's all coaches can go after and see what you put on film as well. Kind of take us back to what your rookie minicamps were or veteran tryouts during rookie minicamps. It really is about trying to impress. How do you do that, though, as some love to tweet at me, they're not in pads, they're not the veterans. So how do you stick around and get a deal?
Well, what you want to do in that time frame, I mean, you're talking OTAs, just looking back at rookie year and how all that stuff went down, you really want to work on your technique, your hand play as a lineman. If we're taking the inside the trenches, you really want to focus on, if you're an offensive lineman, when to shoot my punch, you know, or which hand to shoot, my inside hand or my outside hand, from a defensive lineman's perspective. And we'll go ahead and break it down a little bit. Hello, somebody. Mm-hmm. From a defensive lineman's perspective, you want to rush half a man and be able to use the right move, whether it's a swim move or a rip. Just so showing the coaches that you can do that, that you're a decent pass rusher, and even the hand play for the run, for team run. When we're going through team run, you want to be able to, from a defensive lineman standpoint, put your hands on the center or the guard, get good hand placement on scoop blocks and reach blocks and maintaining your gap and, you know, things of that nature, being able to perfect that and show the coach, hey, I can let your linebackers fly free because my guy isn't able to climb up to the next level. So it's a few things. It's a lot of things, actually, you can work on in this time frame.
Take us back. Yeah, you just got done LSU, right? So here's your first time rookie camp. You're getting a chance to go against some guys that are trying to play here in the NFL. And I'm going to use, I guess, one of the plays I've been talking about with JT Barrett. But in specific, there's Davenport. He, you know, that speed, the spin move, and then boom, the offensive lineman's still there. You didn't get past him. You get the jump off the line, Marlon. Boom, the offensive lineman's still there. You didn't get to the quarterback. How quickly do you realize that same level of energy and speed and stuff doesn't kind of maybe fly here in the NFL? It's going to be up to you. You have to use technique, I guess, is what I'm getting at, not just speed and strength. Does that make sense?
No, Gus, you make a lot of sense. You can't. It's a different level, right? And in Davenport's in his defense, he hasn't played against a lot of tier of talent. And I'm not just pulling the strings of the SEC, but when you play in the SEC, you get a lot of those coaches that are either fresh out of the NFL or have really the Nick Sabans of the world. Mm-hmm. So your technique, a lot of stuff. Hey, Coach Dunbar, when Coach Carl Dunbar came to LSU, he came from Chicago, the Bears. So you're getting that type of coaching, and you're getting it early. So playing in the SEC against Georgia, against Florida with Tim Tebow and all these different – hey, you just say JT Barrett. There's Urban Meyer right there. Hello. So, you know, playing against that type of talent as an SEC player, going to my first time in the NFL, I went to Carolina Panthers. Mm-hmm. I was able to adjust faster, especially in the run game. But, again, something I really wanted to work on in OTAs, organized team activity, is my pass moves. And I'm pretty sure that's what Davenport was doing. I didn't get a chance to watch. I'm going to have to come out there with you guys next time to get an eye on him. But, you know, the rip, the swim. Hey, a good offensive lineman, they read that. They take the proper steps, and they're able to have good hand play. And, oh, can't do that, buddy, not here. But if you do it at the right time, it's playing chess, Gus. Game of chess. You have to do the right moves at the right time, and I think that young lad will catch on, especially when he can add the bull rush with the pads.
At Big Fave 504 is the way to follow Marlon on Twitter. I chuckled, Marlon, because those were literally the words that I was telling Brian about that we're going to see the next time I think we see Davenport. One of the things I noticed from that tackle, Michael Oli, there, and again, he's a veteran guy. He's 30 years old. He's been in a league, a couple of teams and stuff. Is that hand placement. That's why I was kind of excited to talk to you about today, that hand placement inside, right? To block, you want to keep your hands inside. That's why you don't get called for holding, things of that nature. But the ability to recover, you know, one of the plays I was talking about that we tweeted out there, he gets beat right off the line. You know, Ola does. And there goes Davenport. Dips his left shoulder. He's heading to the quarterback. And then that extension of the arms and using, I guess, that pass rush and that momentum and just steering him and kind of just fending him off allows the quarterback the passing lane. He delivers the football. There was another set of plays or two, same thing. You just saw what looks like a bench press, Marlon, where that offensive lineman just extends his arms and kind of punching inside and kind of disrupted Davenport even right on a spin move. And I was like, wow, that's a guy that knows how to handle this. And look, Davenport dwarfed Ola, you know, just size-wise. Is it a detriment to be that big, or are there different things that a guy that is tall maybe has to learn that maybe a guy, and I'm not saying you're not tall, Marlon, but maybe a guy that isn't 6'4", 6'5", like that has an advantage of?
Well, in the words of Lil Wayne on Dedication 6, man, I wish I was a little bit taller. But honestly speaking, with those guys, though, let's say, for instance, Julius Peppers, right? Julius understood the leverage game, and that once Davenport gets that down pat, it's lights out, because it's really about leverage. So for a guy like me, being short actually helped in my advantage a lot. Like for me, I like interior linemen to be short guys like Brandon Meatbang or Sheldon Rankin, or, you know, guys that's within that 6'2", because they can win the leverage game. You have long enough arms to where you can get that extension, and I'm pretty sure that's what Coach Payton really likes about Davenport, the long arms and extension, the potential. Once he gets the technique down pat and understand the leverage, it lights out. So a real story. So here's the lesson. This was a lesson for me in year two. So I just leave New Orleans, ironically, from the Super Bowl. I went to Buffalo, and then I went to Indianapolis. Jeff Saturday was my teammate. I'll never forget, Gus. I'll try my hardest to make a long story short, but I got introduced to the hand on the head move. So I lined up at the shade, right? So my folks that's listening, the shade is right on the outside shoulder of the center. He reached out, and at the same time he hiked the ball of Peyton, he hit me right on the top of my helmet. So I'm looking side to side like, wait, what flag? And he was set. It's like, oh, you're not going anywhere. So that split second, that technique he used, so young offensive lineman, listen right now. Hello, somebody. We're dropping a little something right now on the Sports Hangover with Gus. That was it was quick, it was fast, and it was veteran. It showed seasoned veteran. So it was interesting, man. But once those guys get the tech, and it was a learning point for me, it actually helped my game. So now I come with my first move. Hello. But man, hand play is very important, and that's what this time is about for those young rookies. And even the second-year veteran guys, like I was coming in the Indy, right, to be able to sharpen that and work on that, let the coaches know, hey, I'm worth staying around here. And I was able to stay with Indy until, like, September, man. I love that organization. And, you know, Reggie Wayne was there. I had somebody from the West Bank, you know, to kind of mentor me and steer me through that time frame. But I remember that, you know, just learning going year two, you know, just being able to adapt and adjust and sharpen the tools. But, man, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, because those are some of the things that, you know, the swing move, just the ripping, and Cam Jordan's gotten so good at that, and he touches on that, and he talks about it, and you'll see him off the side, you know, grabbing either a tackling dummy, or you'll see drills of D-linemen literally just doing that, going inside, dipping the shoulder, going back outside, and if he were to do that on the 2-3 plays that I just mentioned, Ola's done. I mean, because he got that quickness off the line. You can definitely see that size, and that spin move was fast. It's once you complete that spin move, what are you doing next to it and reading it? So it was fun to kind of watch the battle inside of the battle. And then while you're figuring that out, you get to the level where Cam Jordan is, where he's an all pro, of understanding where you are, how deep you are, how long it's taking you. And then Marlon go, I'm not going to get there. Up come the hands. And then you go with the, you know, the triple double, the double digit pass blocks. I mean, that's the thing that makes so much sense, man. And you're talking about the learning curve and how that takes, but to know, man, if I'm already a second in my head of it, I'm not probably going to get a sack. So do I, you know, throw my hands up? Am I looking for a run? There's so much that has to happen so quickly, read and recognize on the snap, right?
You're absolutely right, Gus. And one thing, the difference between the difference between between Davenport and Cam Jordan is years. Repetition is the father of learning. The more you do it, the more you're sitting in film. I'm guaranteeing you, you're sitting next to Cam in film, and they're going, "Hey, man, it's right here. You want to use your hands this way." You know, you're being around a seasoned veteran, a guy that's been there, done that. In Cam Jordan. I remember when he came in as a rookie back in 2010. Him and Mark Ingram. I can remember those guys coming in as rookies and just slowly but surely adapting to the game. And now that they're Pro Bowlers, have been a part of this organization for years, you know, he could be a really good mentor to Davenport. So mm-hmm. I look forward to seeing these guys, man, wreak havoc. And then Okafor, don't forget about him, too. He's been around a little younger, but he's been around as well. So, you get that team chemistry going. We talk about this a lot, Gus, how important team chemistry is on a football team. Guys that gel, man, sky's the limit. You'll win a lot of games. Hello.
No doubt. And then finally, Marlon, as we wrap up, the other element of this is you have a little week here, kind of try to get the playbook a little bit more down, because next week, dude, the vets come in. And you heard JT Barrett earlier in the show say, hey, our install is half of one day's worth of installs for the vets. That's a whole nother element of having to adjust, isn't it, Marlon? Right when you got out of LSU, just the amount of plays and the amount of information you have to be given and process and then recall?
Real quick, that's why I thought the craziest thing, man, was when people say, man, football players are dummies. No, we're not. You have to learn that information. Some of it may look like foreign language. A lot of what I had to learn was memorizing how things look, because just different terminology. So for those rookies, when you finish up, look, New Orleans is beautiful. Get out to the lake, enjoy yourself, enjoy the city in, but you need to be in that hotel or wherever they have you put up in a little condo, studying those plays and learning that, so you're not thinking about it. Because when you get out there, you got to let them know, hey, I can play with the veteran. Mashon Lattimore, off rip. I'm here. What's good? What's the play, Coach? Bam, let's do it. I'm locking him up. Let's go. Oh, this kid can play. Oh, he's catching on. Oh, he did that. He caught on to that. He's studying it. He's learning it. He's getting the football IQ, right, Gus?
Right.
You want to get that down pat. This time, that's what this time is for, especially when the veterans come, because when the vets come, Drew Brees has the reps he's going to do. Kamara has the reps he's going to do. Then they're out. Then the next group are in. So you may be a part of a group. Sometimes I was a part of a group where I only had two plays. And then it's to the next deal. Because, hey, we're here getting the veterans back into it. Teams here. You can get a part of it. You can become a part of this. Get cut. Or you can learn the stuff. Get it. Let us know that you're worthy of being a part of this 53-man roster. Or we can put you on the practice squad.
I've always said, Marlon, that's the hardest thing for some of these guys that are trying to make it. And again, the OTAs, the practices, they're games to a lot of those guys like you, where you got two snaps in team drills. That's it. You have to put something on film in two snaps. I need 30 seconds from you, and we'll talk again on Friday a little bit more foosball, but I got 30 seconds for you. You ready?
Let's get it.
The appropriate music, the sad violin. As yes, not only is he a Cowboys fan, but Marlon Favorite always is a Cavaliers fan. Give me a reason to not think your guy, LeBron James, and the Cleveland Cavaliers are not sunk, as Boston put a whooping on them yesterday. 30 seconds, Marlon, with the appropriate music.
Oh, this is genius. I love it. First of all, shout out to Uptown Ruler. secondly, man, hey, Boston showed up game one. Hey, so it's always a second chance. So we'll see on Tuesday. But
okay,
as far as my Cowboys go, November 29th is going to be an interesting day. You know, I'm going to be torn, man, because I love my beloved Saints, and I just don't happen to love the Dallas Cowboys. So
that's all the time we have for Marlon Favorite. I'm sorry we have a bad connection. Something's going on. I don't know what that is, but we'll talk again on Friday. Thank you, Marlon. As always, appreciate it, buddy. There he is, Marlon Favorite.
Take care, bro.
At Big Fave 504 is the way to follow him on Twitter. At Dino Hoops 11 is the way to follow Dino Hansen. He's on deck. Or should I say Jordan waiting to check in at the scores table. See what I just did there? It's a basketball reference. Jordan, did you just learn something?
I guess, Gus. than knowing this.
Did I hint? Did I sense a hint of sarcasm there, Joey? I really did. A little hint of sarcasm. It's exactly what I just got. Sports Hangover continues next on ESPN New Orleans. October 29th, 2017, Game 5. Dodgers and Astros. It's 11-12 right now, top of the ninth. Jordan and I are watching it here in studio. That series was, it was a wiffle ball championship between those two teams. It really was. By the way, Jordan was really good at wiffle ball. Dino Hansen joining us to talk a little basketball. What's up, Dino? How are you, buddy?
I am fantastic, man. Hey. How's your photographic memory?
My photographic memory? Well, I mean, it's not nearly as good as the king, because then you can only be as good as him in the photographic memory. It's funny him recalling a series of plays, and they're making it to seem like no one else can do it. No, but I get what he was doing there, because he was asked what happened in the fourth quarter. And we're talking about the Eastern Conference Finals, 108-83, was held to 15 points. We'll get to that in a second. But, Dino, it's funny you start out with that, because we've talked, when it comes to the Pelicans, about valuing possessions and how a game can kind of sway or go another way. And what made them good and made that run is they were able to stop runs or start runs their own and then do that. In that game, it's close, and then boom, Boston goes on that run, and a lot of it was just simple stuff. Missed shots, an inbound three from Marcus Smart, as he talked about, and he goes, boom, that's the game. People are making out to seem like he didn't do it, but what he's telling you is, to him, that stretch of 2-3 minutes determined the game.
Okay. I disagree. But it really did. Mm-hmm. Quite frankly. And the determining factor, and mind you, I'm not disregarding, that was a sequence within a whole flux of sequences that the Boston Celtics did something that Cleveland has never done. They defended. If you look at the touches that LeBron is getting, first of all, he's uncomfortable. Remember, we've been talking about this for years. As long as you and I have been brothers, we've been talking about this. No offensive player, no shooter, no scorer wants someone in their space. Before LeBron can even get a touch, a lot of times, they're sending double teams at him already. They're forcing other players to have an impact on the game. I say that to say Boston is making it a point to defend, and once they create the stops and defending you, then they're getting out on the break and attacking you. That game was actually over at the half, quite frankly. You knew Cleveland was going to make a run in the third. And I even tweeted it before they even started making their run. I said, listen, this is a young team, that being Boston. They're going to have a lap where they lose focus. Brad Stevens recognized that as well. Calls a timeout, gets them back in the huddle. And I don't know if people listen to the Wired section when they're hearing coaches in the huddle. Dude, they're some of the best and dead-on right things that they're doing. They and Brad Stevens also has his guys understanding, and remember, this is something that the Pel stopped doing, and it made a difference in their season as well. When you don't get a call, stop complaining. Stop whining. Stop throwing your hands up. You didn't get the call, come right back at them and keep being the aggressor.
You know,
Boston came out as the aggressor.
Yeah, and I was going to say, what's interesting, too, is one of the things in the stat box, speaking with Dino Hansen, was talking Eastern Conference Finals tonight. The Western Conference Finals gets underway. LeBron was 5 of 16, 0 for 5 from downtown, but only 5 from 6 from the line. And this is what I did. This is, again, this is when I criticize him. No one can stop him if he attacks and drives. Now, Boston did a fantastic job, and you've seen a lot of tweets of people taking snippets of video on how Boston was defending him. Different looks, different players, rotating and all of that. So it maybe stopped him from driving and penetrating, Dino, but you got to have more than six free throw attempts if you're LeBron. And here's the interesting aspect of it. When you look at a 108-83 and Dino saying Boston was the more aggressor, Cleveland got more free throws. They went to the line 20 times, made 17. Boston only went to the line 13 times and made 11. So Cleveland got to the line, but don't you agree we'd be saying the same thing about Anthony Davis? There's no way the king, the greatest unstoppable force ever, only gets to the line six times.
You're dead on right. And guys, here's the funny thing about it. If you looked at the shots that Boston were taking, they had the majority good, clean looks at the rim. Cleveland is not a good defensive basketball team. Boston literally got whatever they wanted. And again, it was them being the aggressor. It was them dictating from beginning to end. These young guys, and I don't say this in a negative fashion, these young guys are so stupid, they don't realize they're not supposed to be doing this right now. You're playing right against the king. You're playing against the greatest ever. These guys have taken, and I'll tell you this, if I'm Brad Stevens or if I'm somebody on that coaching staff, I am most certainly posting that quote up in the locker room where LeBron said, I'm not the least bit concerned right now.
Right. Well,
he's disrespecting you guys.
I'll say this. Marcus Morris came out and I wouldn't say talk smack. I mean, this is today's media. Talk smack. He was confident. Yeah. He said, hey, I can defend LeBron. There's nothing wrong with that. I want my player to feel confident. What is he going to say? I'm getting smoked this series.
Exactly,
you know,
Gus.
You know what
I mean? He wasn't arrogant about it.
No.
Who wants to go into a game? Why do you want to have teammates?
Oh, he's dropping
like,
50
well,
on me tonight.
Right. Yeah, like, I want teammates, and I want my guys to feel like, listen, we're going to do whatever we can. I am going to stop him. If that's what it takes for me to do, and I loved the attitude in which that's what you want your guys to be playing with. Listen, we know who LeBron is. By far one of the greatest basketball players ever. Hands down, you can't deny that. But if you think I'm going to step on the court, and everybody who listens to this show, they have to be honest with themselves. When you step onto the court, do you want guys who feel like, you know what, I am not going to let this guy have his way with me tonight? If that means the whole team has to be involved, if that means we're going to throw different looks at him, if that means I have to man up and guard him, here's the other thing that they did, Gus, and we talked about this before as well. If you don't want LeBron to score, what do? Don't let LeBron catch the ball.
Mm-hmm.
They prevented a lot of him getting touches as well.
No, that team is so well coached. It's crazy to see. Brad Stevens also went deep into the bench there. 11 played, obviously, when the score got out of hand, but Marcus Smart did awesome. Monroe got even some minutes here as well. But look,
if you notice when LeBron was going through his photographic deceptive answer, because that's what it was, he was deceiving everyone, if you will, getting away from, because he never said why it started. He started talking about the how, the what. But here's the thing about it. He mentioned Jordan Clarkson, accidentally called him Jordan Crawford. This is your teammate. Okay, so I can bypass that. But he said Jordan Clarkson come down, he missed a shot. We go back, they get a transition bucket. Marcus Smart comes to the corner, out of bounds play. He shoots a shot and he scores. Do you know who was guarding Marcus Smart on that out of bounds play when he hit that three from the corner?
J.R. Smith.
Yeah. No, brother, the king.
No, it was J.R. Smith. It was J.R. Smith's guy. That's what that was.
Here's my thing. Why do you name everybody else, but you don't say, and in that same process, I missed my assignment, and Marcus Smart got a wide open three?
Well, I'll tell you what. I definitely think in game two we'll see a more aggressive LeBron James. Western Conference Finals underway tonight. Who you got, man? Look, Houston and Golden State. I saw what Golden State did, obviously, here against the Pels. They're playing their best basketball. But I still find a lot of people not giving Houston a shot here or a chance to do. They're a one-point favorite. It's 229, the over-under between the two. Georgia's giving me the sweep look for what, Golden State? Is that what you're saying?
Just
oh, my goodness.
Haven't seen
Stop it.
Of the game,
no, whatever.
Swept.
No, they're not getting swept.
Bet.
I'm going Houston in this series.
So Jordan is saying Golden State sweeps Houston.
Nah, I'd say five games.
Five games?
Five games.
Wow.
Okay, and LeBron's getting swept. I actually believe LeBron's getting swept.
I actually think Houston in seven.
No.
Here's the thing about it. The reason why Houston is not getting the respect that they regularly season deserve, if you will, so to speak, that's the exact same reason why Toronto and LeBron. You haven't proven yourself in the postseason. We saw what happened with James Harden, how he disappeared last year, so to speak. We know Chris Paul and Steph Curry have their little tete-a-tete, if you will, and Steph enjoys putting him on skates. The fact that CP3 hasn't guided his team to that next level. So the questions, naturally and normally, they're going to be there until Houston comes out and shows that they can beat. I tell you this much. If Golden State comes in tonight and beats Houston in Houston, that narrative grows even more so of, is Houston just a great regular season team, but not the playoff team? Think about, for as great as Peyton Manning was, what do people say? He was the greatest regular season quarterback, not the greatest postseason quarterback. So until you show your wares in the postseason, you're going to have that narrative be there. Golden State, on the other hand, they are a basketball juggernaut, not just on the offensive end. We've seen what they do defensively, how in the blink of an eye, here it is, we as the Pels, we're right there to take command of a game, even have the lead. All of a sudden, Golden State goes on that defensive aggressive attack, start rebounding the basketball, and then attacking. Next thing you know, the Pels are down by 15 and 20. You're like, wait, what happened? I just went to grab a sandwich, and now this is what Golden State does. They allow you, if you will, and I know you and George can appreciate this, as well as the listeners. Golden State allows you to beat yourself, if you will. They allow you to take poor shots. They allow you to feel like you have to hurry up and play speed ball, and then you lose sight of what you need to do. I can't say who's going to win tonight because, you know, you've had a week off, if you will, quite frankly. So you don't know who's going to be in rhythm, who's not. You know, there are so many different variables to game number one. But right. Game number one will definitely set a precedent, but it's going to be tough for you.
So who you got? Who you got?
I got Golden State just because I love Golden State's basketball and the way they play, man. And I love Steph Curry. And, you know, I love Klay Thompson, man, and how he can just drill you. And you look up and he's just taking over a basketball game and he doesn't get the credit that he deserves. But I just love the way Golden State plays basketball, man. It's kind of like watching Boston right now. Even if Cleveland does win the series, and I won't put it past LeBron and Cleveland winning a series, I just really enjoy watching the Boston Celtics team right now because they're playing great team basketball.
Right.
Same thing with Golden State. They move the ball. They're so unselfish. They're excited. The guys on the bench are excited. There's just this camaraderie that you love to watch. But as much as you may hate Golden State, you have to respect the game and what they do, man. It's just beautiful brand of basketball.
That's Dino Hanson at Dino Hoops 11. So we're going to follow over on Twitter. We'll be paying attention tonight to the Western Conference Finals game number one. So you and Jordan going Golden State. I'm going to take Houston. We'll see. We'll have fun. We'll chat tomorrow, bud.
All righty, my brother. Talk to you guys later.
The NFL has released a statement on the Supreme Court overturning the federal ban on sports gambling. So, yes, a bunch of states going to start having it here soon. I'll read what the NFL has to say. You shouldn't be shocked. They haven't liked it. They've warned about it. The NBA's embraced it. They're like, hey, we're all about it. We know you're doing it anyway. So they're like, hey, might as well make some money off of it and do something on it. We'll touch on that and put our wraps on the show coming up at 4:15. 4:15 on After Further Review with Matt Moscona, quarterback Drew Brees of your New Orleans Saints at 4:15 right here on ESPN New Orleans. We'll be back to wrap up the Sports Hangover. Welcome back, Sports Hangover, final segment. Again, don't forget, 4:15, quarterback Drew Brees on after further review with Matt Moscona coming up here in a little bit. So the NFL has released a statement. And again, I said it going into the break, you shouldn't be shocked on how they feel about the fact that you will now have legalized sports gambling and betting. The NFL's longstanding and unwavering commitment to protecting the integrity of our game remains absolute. Congress has long recognized the potential harms posed by sports betting to the integrity of sporting contests and the public confidence in these events. Given that history, we intend to call on Congress again, this time to enact a core regulatory framework for legalized sports betting. We also will work closely with our clubs to ensure that any state efforts that move forward in the meantime protect our fans and the integrity of the game. I guess they're worried about that, you know, a linebacker or DB may be like, whoop, I slipped. Oh, man, I really thought I had that receiver touchdown the other team we cover. That's the big thing here, right? That's the big thing here. You'll be able to do it. Will the NBA, will leagues allow their players to? I don't see that happening or changing. How do you stop that? How do you stop a player who happens to know Jordan, who, again, you're trying to get what kind of bucks?
Big baller money.
Yeah. Hands you a couple of bills that are 100 and tell you to go place the bet. It is what it is. I would say this. To those that fix games or do, it's going to happen regardless. You understand what I'm saying? If you're going down that route and that's who you are already, I don't think this is going to increase athletes saying that already. Because I think back in the day when all this happened, maybe those players didn't get much money. Now, how's that work in college? Look, we'll talk a little bit more about this here as well. Don't forget, 4:15, Drew Brees on After Further Review of Matt Moscona. He is up next. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to ESPN New Orleans.